Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So Spain against Canada will be the final of the Davis Cup. And it's been another day where we keep thinking, oh, it's going to be an early night tonight. And here we are, 1 o'clock in the morning my time and Catherine's time, 2 o'clock in the morning Matt's time. And we've had yet more drama and it's hard to know where to start. So I think we'll work our way backwards because the two tiebreak sets we've just had in the doubles between Great Britain and Spain were so captivating, so thrilling, really, in terms of just the energy and the excitement generated. I don't know, I just feel as though that was as good as sport gets. I mean, forget formats, whatever. Just that was two teams going at it in the most incredibly passionate stadium. And Rafael Nadal just underlined his Superman status, Catherine.
Yes, I'm annoyed that Matt already used Mary Carrillo's line about Nadal yesterday.
I went too early.
Because it was called to mind again today, wasn't it? I mean, he is a force of nature. And to think that we're still sort of seeing facets of him that I don't feel like I've seen before.
Mm.
At 33 years of age, given everything,
feels like he's getting better.
Just done, it does. Which defies logic. I mean, this is going to sound ridiculous, but have you ever seen Nadal that pumped before? That certainly on a par with any pumped Nadal that I've seen in the past.
Bruguera was asked that afterwards, and he said, "Well, he's just like this in every match." Now, I happen to agree with you.
Not as demonstrably.
No. I mean, and it was what really struck me was when he kicked off at the umpire about that inability to, or she wasn't letting them challenge an out call. And he just couldn't handle it. And he went charging up to her and he was shouting, impossible to be any faster. And she wouldn't back down.
Except so charges, without the verbs.
Yeah. So he charges up to Wayne McHugh and the referee and he says the same thing to him. He comes over and talks to the umpire and they're in agreement. We're not backing down here. And then he goes stomping back to the baseline and he grabs hold of Feliciano Lopez by the kind of collar and he just punches him in the chest. I don't know what he said, but the gist I got was, right then, we're going to shove it up everybody now. I don't care what happens now. We're going to destroy these people because we're not having it. Matt, you were in the stadium. You tell us.
Yeah, I was trying to work out all evening whether it was better to be in Neil Skupski and Jamie Murray's position of being facing that intensity from Nadal, or Feliciano Lopez and having to try and match that intensity of Nadal. I felt for everyone on that court because Nadal's presence and intensity was so overwhelming in that stadium and in that match. And ultimately, there were four players on that court. They all played extremely well in parts. Jamie Murray and Neil Skupski the whole match. Lopez was a little bit more up and down. But I just could not take my eyes off Nadal. He imposed himself, his game, his aura, everything on the whole stadium. And everyone was hanging. You know how people say people kind of hang on someone's every word? Well, everyone was hanging on every Nadal shot because there was just an expectancy that he would do something brilliant with it. And in that second set tiebreak, Marian Skupski had a set point at 6-5, and the point Nadal played will stay with me forever. I think, firstly, the fact that he was on the ad side was a significant factor. It meant that he was getting the important points. Lots of the important points are played on the ad side. It was a good serve. He had a backhand return that was dipping and low at the toes, but he got a really short volley that he had to charge up towards, and he did.
Well, it was a shanked volley. It was Jamie Murray got it off the frame of his racket. Okay. That's why it sort of dropped so short.
Okay. And then he charged up to it, and running full pelt, he still managed to have the softest hands and just lobbed it over Jamie Murray, I think it was, who then scampered back. It landed so close to the baseline. Jamie Murray threw up a really good defensive lob, and Nadal just sort of moved Feliciano Lopez out of the way as if to say, this smash is mine. And he nailed it for a winner straight down the middle. And the place erupted, took the roof off. And I will never forget that moment. And it was Rafael Nadal just doing what he does, and yet it still managed to surprise me. Like you said, I still feel like we saw more from Nadal than I've ever seen from him. It was mind-boggling.
Mm. And you know, to put it into perspective, we were really close up. I was courtside watching Feliciano Lopez play doubles with Andy Murray this summer at Queen's, and I remember feeling what a presence Lopez has on a doubles court, and how pumped he was, and yet, stood next to Nadal, he just looks nothing by comparison.
Decidedly low energy, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I thought that Neil Skupski in particular played a really brilliant match, because all this stuff we're saying about Nadal, there really is no way you can prepare for that. He's never played Nadal before. And for him to come out and play as well as he did under that pressure, against Nadal playing like that, I thought he showed me something that I've certainly never seen from him before as well.
Has Jamie Murray ever played Nadal?
Apparently, I think Stu Fraser tweeted that he'd beaten Nadal in 2007. So I'm not sure how relevant that would have been to tonight. Whether they've played since, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, I mean,
was Jelena Jankovic his partner back then for that match? I've just listened to the press conference that the British team did, and Neil Skupski was asked what it was like facing that forehand for the first time, and he said, you know, it took me a few games to get used to the pace of his shots, but I got there eventually. And actually, I mean, goodness me, he held his own. And when they were at 6-4 in that seconds of tiebreak, it felt like it was going to be a travesty if they didn't win that set.
Mm.
And yet at the same time, because of that point that you described that Nadal won for Spain, he just ripped it from their grasp. And look, it was hard on the British pair not to have a third set there, but how can you deny Nadal? I don't think there was a human on the planet that could have stopped him today in that mood, in that form. And I include even the great Novak Djokovic and Roger Federer in that. I just don't see how, in front of that crowd, anybody could have stopped him.
It's impossible to play better under pressure tennis than what Nadal did in that tiebreak, because he followed up that amazing point I described with an inside-out forehand winner.
A shot that you just don't see on the doubles court. He used Feliciano Lopez as a sort of human shield for himself, or a sight screen, or sort of combination thereof. And I don't know, maybe that was fluke, but it just didn't feel it in the moment, did it? Jamie Murray was there. He had a play on it, but he didn't see the ball until it was too late because Feliciano Lopez was blocking the line of sight. It was, mind-bending.
And just to continue what you were saying about Nadal showing us stuff, new stuff, for Nadal to be playing this tennis at the end of the season, this well, this often, he's playing twice a day and he's winning both of them. And normally Nadal can't really make it to the end of the season, let alone look as ravenous and as just brilliant as he is. And okay, he missed the Asian swing, but he's played a very full season this year. He's, we've talked about all the semifinals these weeks. He's played a lot of tennis and he's still going this strong. Just 2 weeks after that Zverev match, the transformation is completely remarkable. I'm really struggling to get my head around it.
He needed tennis and momentum, didn't he? What he needed was to be playing two matches a day for 2 weeks, and he's got his wish.
It is 2 weeks ago. Well, it's 2 days short of 2 weeks ago that match happened, and when that match happened, I was in the commentary box describing it next to Dan Evans, and it takes me back to the fact that when I asked Evans who's going to win the tournament, who do you fancy for this? He said, "Oh, Nadal, absolutely Nadal." This was before that match, and I mean, look, he was so shocked by that performance from Nadal that day. I mean, obviously he hadn't played in ages. He was rusty. He was coming off that injury, all the question marks. But even all the way through the match, you could see Evans just couldn't understand what was going on when he was watching Nadal against Zverev. He couldn't understand how it didn't end up happening. He obviously just reveres him to such a degree. And then later on in the week, when he had a couple of his matches that he won, he messaged to say, I told you, when he plays his best, I don't think anybody can live with him. And then suddenly last night, after that incredible win for Evans in his final group match, I said to him, "Hey, you got Nadal now. Good luck with that." And he was, he was trying to sort of back himself. But, I think Evans played as well as he can possibly play for 8 games to 4-all.
Much like their meeting in Montreal earlier in the summer, Dan Evans played a brilliant match, absolutely flat out. It's just a horrible matchup for him. And it just, as impressed as I was, it just felt inevitable, didn't it? The result always felt inevitable. And it's interesting hearing you say that about how Evans felt about Nadal having stood on the other side of the court with him, and also hearing, at the same tournament, Tsitsipas saying, without stopping to catch breath, when asked who the toughest of the big three is to play for him, Nadal. Of course, Nadal. And he spoke for everyone else and he said, "Oh, yeah, everyone thinks Nadal." And look, I mean, obviously that is in part due to how brilliant a tennis player he is. But I think it's the aura. I think it's that way he imposes himself on a tennis court. I cannot imagine poor old Jamie Murray and Neil Skubsky, brilliant tennis players, great doubles team, really rose to the occasion today. They've got so much to be proud of. I mean, Jamie Murray's a Davis Cup winner himself and a Grand Slam champion, but they look like two blokes from the park, didn't they, in comparison to just the electricity coming off Nadal. I mean, I could feel it from London, and it was in Madrid. It was just mesmerising, utterly mesmerising.
Let's actually hear from Jamie Murray in that press conference. I found one of his answers really interesting, talking about the power of doubles and what it was like, playing Nadal and having this, as you say, a completely different sport almost that they bring to the court. It's not conventional doubles. Let's have a listen to this.
Tennis is, for the last 10 years, it's been about the big four and it's been about stars. But actually, there's a hell of a lot of amazing talent on the ATP Tour. And I think you know, doubles has a huge part to play in that. And I think when you get, you know, a lot of those guys competing in the doubles, you know, the level is incredibly high. I think nowadays with the way that the sport is, there's different ways to play doubles, different ways to win at doubles. And, you know, we're more traditional players who like to serve and volley and come to the net and use those sort of skills. You know, Rafa, he plays a more, let's say, unorthodox way, maybe, which is a lot more common now in the game, because these guys can, you know, they serve big and then, you know, they have great ground strokes that make it difficult to volley against. But that's what makes it, you know, fun to see that those sort of different styles on the court together. And, you know, I think you saw tonight, like, you know, that's doubles at its best, really. I mean, you've got one of the greatest players ever on the court competing for his country and, you know, make or break match. And, you know, it was an exciting match. It was a really close match. There was a lot of good exchanges. You know, everyone was playing well, and, you know, unfortunately for us, we lost. But I think overall it's, you know, it's definitely a positive thing to kind of see these guys fighting so hard on the doubles court to win a point for their country.
I find that a perfect example of how, I mean, that was towards the end of the press conference with Jamie Murray, and at the start he was asked about it, and he was, you know, he was philosophical, but obviously very deflated, as all the team were. But he kind of almost worked it out of his system by talking about it. And then by the end of the press conference, he was in a position, and I think all of them were, where they feel really proud and as though they've been part of something really special tonight. And yeah, it's just another example of how this event, this format, I think can work. And the best part about the whole thing has been the deciding doubles rubbers in these ties. What is it, 5 out of 6 now, Matt?
Yeah, that's right. 5 of the last 6 ties have gone down to the doubles.
And how many of those have been deciding set tiebreaks? 3?
Not sure, but there's...
Yeah, 2 or 3 for sure. Yeah. You know, both the Russian ones were, and then obviously this was 2 tiebreaks, not a deciding set tiebreak, but it kind of felt like it. And the, you know, I just think that the doubles has always been such a big day in Davis Cup, and it used to be great that it had its own day, which was really nice, but it was never, as we said yesterday, it was never the most important match, because there was a chance to make up for it afterwards, or it was already 2-0 and the tie was heading one way. Now, when the doubles is played, it is the most important match because it is the decider, and you're going to get occasions where you have teams who have a doubles specialists, and you're going to get teams who have great singles players, and they're going to be drafted in, and that is always going to be such an interesting and fun thing to watch, what Jamie was saying there about the different styles of doubles. And I just think the way that it's set up now, we're going to see a lot more of that, and I'm here for it.
Another a couple of things that Leon Smith said in the press conference that I wanted to just raise. One was, we heard, I think we touched on it last night, how Britain were trying to scramble tickets together to get some people in the stadium, and they'd worked out they'd got 400, and then those all sold out, and they went and got another 400. So they had, you know, they sold out, they got virtually 1,000 people in the stadium, which was a fantastic effort, I think, from the team to kind of
elderly British fans. Every time the camera cut to them, I heard Matt saying, "The elderly British fans."
Was I wrong?
No, you weren't.
People with disposable income who can get there.
The retired.
But, you know, they got free tickets, and I thought that was a great effort from, well, from the LTA to organise it, and from the players to kind of get behind it and whip up the frenzy of interest. You know, that was just, that was brilliant. And Leon was talking about his impressions of the week and things that need to be better. And obviously there's the things like the schedule and all those sort of things. But he said, you know, the thing that we take away from with Davis Cup is what was the atmosphere like. And obviously tonight it was incredible. But because of the lack of home and away with anybody else other than Spain, you risk losing that. And he said he feels that when they go away and they'll do all sorts of brainstorming and feedback meetings on this stuff, he says he'd like to think that they are going to find a way to direct a budget, a package of whatever the money that all these federations are getting, into finding a way to get a group, a hardcore group of fans to these ties, because you know, it lives and dies by its atmosphere, doesn't it? He was... Sorry, Matt, you were going to say?
Well, I was just going to say that is absolutely fundamental. That I really do think that needs to happen. And even if it's just one of the ties on Stadium 2 or Stadium 3, we saw the impact that the travelling British fans had on those courts and the travelling Canadian fans. And if all the teams had a support like that, then all those group stage matches would have been elevated even further, and we wouldn't really have been talking probably about the atmosphere because it would have been there. However, it came to me today, is there a problem with the fact that this is in Spain for this year, it's going to be in Spain next year. Spain are one of the best teams especially if they've got Nadal. And is this tournament thriving because of the fact that Spain are doing well in it? If this was held in a country where the host nation wasn't doing so well, what would the atmosphere have been like in there tonight? And you know, if there wasn't Nadal, how much of the success is the Nadal factor? Is the Spain factor? I do think that's a slight concern going forward. Mm.
Yeah, I think so too. The same thoughts occurred to me. You know, is the Nadal and Spain factor sort of providing a bit of a fig leaf over a potentially major issue? I mean, there's a slight chicken and egg factor there in that, you know, I think Spain's success and Nadal's success is being amplified by the fact that they're in Spain and they're enjoying the home support that is assisting them all. But yeah, without question, I think that's definitely something that they should consider and not ignore.
And their whole model, sorry, David, their whole model of the kind of World Cup style event, you know, World Cups are not held every year.
No.
And they do move around. And I'm not necessarily against the fact that Spain have had the home advantage for the whole tournament. I don't necessarily find that too much of a problem. But if it's going to be in Spain, and I think there is an argument to keep it in Madrid to try and build it and try and grow some momentum with it. But, you know, if it's there for 2-3 more years, that seems a little bit unfair.
I think there's a major credibility issue even having it there for next year. Now that we've had it here for this year, how is that fair? How is that fair on all the other nations when you've got this massive home support? Fine for a year, have a host nation, but
let's be honest, there's always going to be an element of unfairness. This event is never going to be held in Colombia, is it? It's not. It can't be. Even just holding it outside of Europe is going to be challenging, just because so many of the nations involved are European. Just practically, to encourage fans to travel, which, as we've just all identified, is the single biggest ingredient to success, taking it away from Europe.
You've at least got to have a South American option, though, the same way as you have for a World Cup in football, I think. On Argentina.
I mean, for fairness purposes, I agree with you, and that feels right, but I think that would be problematic. Crowds-wise, fans-wise, atmosphere-wise.
I don't know. I mean, look how many... I know it's Roger Federer, but look how many people he is bringing out. in South America right now, 42,000 in Mexico. I know it's Roger Federer, but what if it's Rafael Nadal? What if it's another big star? I mean, these people, if it's promoted right, there's a massive interest in sport in South America.
As there is in Madrid, but it doesn't mean they're out watching GB Belgium.
No, well, look, I take that point, certainly. But I also think the Magic Box is one of the most extreme examples of a soulless stadium. Now, they made it rock tonight, but it's one of the most difficult stadia around, I think, for that. But no, I think it's one of the big questions I have is how can you be taken seriously as a competition if you're going to return to the same place? I think that's a big problem.
Yeah, you almost wonder whether they could do a kind of Eurovision style thing. If you win it, you host it kind of thing, or something a little bit outside the box like that, so that it will get shared around. But yeah, I mean, the practical, you know, places need to have the facilities to be able to host it, you know, that multiple courts are needed. That's another debate. Maybe even three isn't enough for this tournament, given the late finishes. Maybe they even need larger venues. There are a lot of logistical question marks about the tournament in this format, and yet from a feel and a concept perspective, it kind of feels right. But I don't know how they go forward with it, given all we've just discussed.
Well, they've just got lots of work to do for a start.
Yeah,
and they're not going to please everybody. They're going to have it in Spain next year. Maybe they'll decide on a hard fast rule for that in the future and not have the same venue every year. But we'll just have to wait and see. But I think that they've had enough good news out of this, I think, to be able to be encouraged. There's been loads and loads of stuff wrong. But crikey, the moments that we've had from this event, as you said about Nadal, they will stay with me. There's some moments from this tournament that I will remember. Incidentally, one other thing that slightly annoyed was Leon Smith was the substitution of Lopez in for Corina Buster at the very last second. That sounded a bit. I don't know how you do that if you've submitted your designated player and then they get injured. Whether that should just be a walkover, but anyway, it was allowed. Sorry, Catherine, were you going to say something?
I can't remember what I was going to say now. But I can't imagine Sergi Bruguera doing dodgy dealings. Can you?
No, I can't actually.
I just think it was strange because there was talk of Corina Buster being injured from the Spanish press conference last night. It was mentioned, and then all throughout the day, the local journalists were, you know, telling everyone basically that Corina Buster's probably not going to be playing, and then suddenly he's in the team when the nominations are put forward, and then somewhat mysteriously with 5 minutes to go, he's changed. It felt dodgy. Now, perhaps something did happen to him extra in that final hour before the match. But, you know, we don't know the situation. As it turned out, it didn't affect the singles. But, you know, you do wonder whether... I've talked before, I think, about the best doubles players often being singles players who've already played that day. And, you know, Lopez found his groove a little bit in that singles and came out. And he actually didn't play great in the doubles, I didn't think. He served really well. But other than that, he was kind of the weak link on the court. So whether it had any impact on the tie, probably not. But, yeah, it felt a bit wrong.
We still don't know why Andy Murray didn't play, do we?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify.
Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
No.
I do find it odd.
There must be something wrong. Quite surprisingly, he wasn't asked about it in the press conference, Leon Smith. And I know he was yesterday asked about it, and he sort of said he's not ready to play, and I've chosen these guys, and they've produced. So that kind of went away without incident. But today, there were a couple of moments. One, when you realised what you're up against with Nadal, his sort of force of nature presence. And there was, as brilliant as Neil Skupski was today, and he deserved to play, there was a moment where you just saw Nadal walk out and you just thought, just imagine if the Murray brothers walked out right now as well. Just in terms of matching up that personality out there. But he was there looking terribly miserable courtside and just going through hell.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same. For sheer aura purposes, to try and fight the force of nature on the opposite side of the court, I thought the only chance of combating that would be with the Murray brothers, and ended up feeling guilty for having felt that as I watched, you know, Neil Skupski rise to the occasion and be really, as much as he doesn't have kind of Murray or Nadal-esque aura and presence, he's an incredibly cool cucumber. I was really struck by that. I really didn't doubt his nerve at any stage.
Because the noise people make when he was about to try and serve in that second set tiebreak, for instance, I don't know how they concentrate when the crowd is kind of whistling and if they miss the first serve and then they kick off again. And as you say, he just kept at it. I was mightily impressed. Yeah. Some players just come good, don't they, in the Davis Cup. And that's two wins and pushing Nadal close. That's a pretty good effort, that.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Andy Murray sank into a state of Tsitsipas-esque despair on the sidelines. There was a prolonged camera shot of him as Skupski and his brother were walking off court. The one of the cameras on the side of the court just panned to Andy Murray, and his face was frozen in a state of just deep despair. It was horrifying.
I mean, for a tennis player who has achieved as much as Andy Murray to be set inches away from that court and not being able to do anything about it that was unfolding must have been agonizing. And normally tennis players watching tennis is one of my absolute favorite things. Felix Auger-Aliassime this week, for example, has been just great to watch in the box, fist pumping. Andy Murray watching tennis is one of my least favorite things. It just made me sad. He was squirming and biting his nails and sort of sinking into his chair and hiding behind his hands. Oh, he was going through hell.
Andy Murray watching his brother. That's the one, isn't it?
He deliberately didn't sit on the front row, didn't he? He wanted to hide himself away. He knew he would be projecting his angst, which he very much was.
Oh dear. And yet he wouldn't go away. He stuck it out. But we don't know what's wrong with him. And I kind of want to know whether it's any more serious than what we knew about.
It's
after
not
that
just biscuits.
First match.
It is not no. just biscuits.
No.
I mean, having a day off after that match was understandable. Having another two and not playing again in the entire tournament, well, there's something wrong. So I want to know what it is, but we don't know. Anyway, we'll find out, I'm sure, in due course. Now, Spain are going to play Canada in the final tomorrow. Canada beating Russia. Quite a fantastic result for Canada, having come from a rubber behind because Vasyl Pospisil finally beaten by Andrei Rublev. Denis Shapovalov is producing, isn't he? Isn't he doing well, really, to step up? I know he can still be erratic, and he was against Alex de Minaur the other day. But he's showing some mettle here, I think. And great, great performance from Canada. The first ever Davis Cup final for them, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And Denis Shapovalov has been really great. Not always the most brilliant tennis that he's capable of, I don't think. But in a way, that's why he's been so impressive, because he's been managing to win without just kind of blowing people off the court necessarily. He's had quite a lot of tight sets, difficult situations. And yeah, he's been really impressive. And this was a big tie for him against Russia. He's obviously got some Russian heritage, and he's got a Russian coach, Mikhail Yuzhny. So there was that connection for him out on the court today. But yeah, he was really great. And to see him combine with Pospisil this week, because the partnership everyone was talking about was Auger Aliassime and Shapovalov. That's the more natural partnership in the Canadian squad. But obviously Auger Aliassime not quite being fit enough because of his ankle. I actually asked Shapovalov and Pospisil in press, what was your relationship like before this tournament, and have you played much before? And this is the first time they've played doubles together, Pospisil and Shapovalov. And Shapovalov said he's always looked up to Pospisil and wanted to play with him ever since he won Wimbledon. And Pospisil said, yeah, we've been through something special together here, and we're going to be stronger because of that, and it's good for our team going forward that this is a partnership that we've developed and a relationship that we've kind of nurtured on court. And yeah, there's something really powerful about them. For them to be able to beat Khachanov and Rublev, who have already got that pre-established friendship before the tie, I thought was just incredibly impressive from them. I think we all picked Khachanov and Rublev yesterday.
Yeah, I thought Russia would make it. Pospisil afterwards asked about the comparison between the Davis Cup ties he's played and the atmospheres he's played in before and this one. And his captain, Frank Dancevic, was interested to listen to as well. Listen to these two.
I feel like the emotions are comparable, to be honest. This is the first semifinal. I mean, this is even I don't know if it was even more emotional. I feel like there's been so much, such a big build up to this day. Just we'd played so many matches to get to the semifinals. So it's a best of three format now, but I wouldn't say it's less taxing on the body, especially if you have to play singles doubles every day. I mean, I feel like it's pretty similar, at least my feeling. I still feel like it's, like we're playing Davis Cup. There's so much on the line. We have great fans that flew in, and so it just felt very similar to playing any other Davis Cup tie, except it just for some reason feels like there's more on the line because all the players are here, all the teams are here. So in some ways that makes it kind of feel even bigger, if that makes sense. I don't know, but feels amazing, and I would still say that they're from a player's perspective, from my perspective, it seems very similar.
It's been an amazing ride so far as a captain. It's quite new to me. I've been doing this for 2 years now, I believe, two and a half years. So it's quite new, and to be in this position this early in my captain career is amazing. I mean, these guys, I have a great team to back it up. These guys are world-class players, and they're playing. This week they played lights out, and I just think that, I'm really, really happy with everything that's going on. I wasn't expecting it, to be honest. I know we have a great team. I know we're great players, but to be in the finals of Davis Cup is a really big deal, and to be here, it's sort of surreal, but, it's kind of gathering the emotions right now, and we have a shot at the title. So I was telling these guys on the chair when I was sitting on match point, my heart was beating so fast that I was actually starting to black out a little bit before the match point. I was trying to control my breathing and just telling myself to breathe slowly and stay calm, and we're close to this.
So Fran Dancevic basically passing out while he's courtside, not very helpful. What an experience for those guys, and to be in the final now. I do love the way Canada embraces tennis, the way they've embraced the Andreescu story and the young Canadian men as well. It's a fantastic story, and they've come out in numbers to support them as well. Do you think they have a better chance of beating Spain in the final than Britain did, or do you think it's going to be straightforward? Do you think we'll get doubles tomorrow?
So,
that's a good question.
Shapovalov does not have a good record against top players.
No,
I don't give him much chance against Nadal. So who do we think will play as Spain's number two? Do we assume Lopez?
Well, they were in the Spanish portion of the press conference tonight. They were saying that, quite unbelievably really, but there is a chance that Bautista Agut will come back and play. He was there today with the team.
There was in fact a caught on camera really moving moment between Nadal and him, an embrace in the tunnel before they were due to walk out. No words spoken, but none needed. Obviously very emotional for the Spanish team.
Bautista, if you didn't hear our show of a couple of nights ago, lost his father a few days ago and left the team as a result of that, but has come back today. So yeah, I mean, incredibly moving to see the pictures of him.
I mean, that would be something if he played. So yeah, I think so. It's about whether Pospisil, I think, can beat Spain's number two.
And Pospisil isn't really fully fit, is he, Matt? I mean, he has put himself through the ringer.
Oh, absolutely. He's got a bit of a shoulder problem. He was getting heavy massage on his shoulder during that doubles. It didn't seem to affect him too much, but it's clearly bothering him.
Got no one else.
No.
I know they're sort of saying Auger Aliassime might be just about fit, but he's not played for weeks. I mean,
yeah, to expect him to come in and play, I think, would be incredibly difficult. I think they'll stick with Pospisil, dodgy shoulder or not.
Just inject some anaesthetic into that shoulder and off you go, Vasek.
Your whole career, yep. But for that moment.
Frank Dancevic is an interesting captain, because I think he must be one of the most understated captains. You know, he didn't have a brilliant singles career, really, you know, like Leighton Hewitt or Amadi Fish, who were captains, Nicholas Massou, and equally he's not like a Leon Smith or a Tarpishev who've got lots and lots of experience in the Davis Cup. And yet I think because he's a similar kind of age to a lot of the players and he's been on the tour with them, I think the players do connect with him quite well. I think there's a relatability there, and it doesn't feel like there's a hierarchy in the Canadian team. It almost feels like Shapovalov and Pospisil, you know, everyone's directing the questions to him, whereas, for example, whereas in Britain's press conference, Leon Smith gets a lot of the questions. He feels like the team spokesperson, but it's less so with Dancevic. And what we were saying yesterday about the kind of end of a golden generation for Serbia, well, this very much feels like the start of a golden generation for Canadian tennis. I mean, it's already started with Andreescu and Shapovalov and Ojeda seem rising, but just for them to be in a Davis Cup final without really using, well, they haven't used Ojeda seem, you know, think what they could be doing in future years. It does feel like the start of a kind of Canadian power in tennis.
Mm, does. Right, yeah, then. I think we are going to get a doubles match tomorrow. Still,
it would feel so wrong if we don't get a doubles in the final.
Yeah,
mm. I think we're given get what we've what had think, this Matt? Week, given how this week has played out, just
nobody will stop Nadal though. Spain will win.
Yeah, I'm not sure we will get a doubles. I think Spain might get it done in the singles. I think that they have had the tougher side of the draw in terms of rest. Nadal actually shut down the press conference in quite respectful way, but he basically said, I know you're all doing your jobs, I need to do mine and I need to go to bed, kind of thing. We all need to rest, and everyone kind of accepted that.
1:05 a.m. finishes enough.
I'm gonna pull in a doll.
And on that note,
in a respectful way, Catherine Whittaker just informed everyone that we all need to rest.
Catherine Whittaker has just left the WhatsApp group. And we are all going to leave the tennis podcast on that note for tonight. Anything else before we do go, Matt? I don't want to cut you off in your prime.
No, I think I've covered most things that happened today. I mean, I can't remember what happened much earlier because so much seems to have happened this evening. It seems to be every day you think, oh, the morning's a really interesting story, and then whatever happens in the afternoon, evening, morning, night, just seems to take over.
Yeah, it's just to let you know, dear listener, it is 10 to 3 in the morning for Matt right now, and he's done this every day for the last 7 days for you. And I hope you're enjoying it here on the Tennis Podcast. And we are as well, in a sort of can't really keep my eyes open and look at the screen anymore kind of way. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot this year is Rio with a Y. We're going to have new mascots next year. We're going to be starting our crowdfunding a week on Monday, and you have your chance to get into the mascot world, folks. If you want to prep your dogs and cats and tortoises and whatever else you've got, we'll accept anything, really. as long as you go for it and pay. That's all you need to do. Anyway, we'll be back with another tennis podcast after the Davis Cup final tomorrow. Hope you're enjoying it. See you then.